Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Cover Zero Podcast, the show where I cover the least in the best way possible. I'm your host, Jason Wells. Today is Wednesday, May 21st. Another week closer to kind of stuff happening. Again, we are in this dead period of the season. I've been saying it basically since the draft ended, but as always, there's still a lot of football news and notes to cover, and this episode, going to be talking about some historical players anyways, guys who just have interesting stories or careers or just like maybe things they did post-career, but this is just going to be the episode of some of the most interesting players in NFL history. I tried to make this like a weekly thing, never really ended up working just because I kept forgetting and there was a lot of other information and episodes were already long, so I'm just going to make it into one big episode. I mean, I got 8 guys to talk about for this episode, so yeah, going to be the most interesting players in NFL history, and then as always, the NFL weekly update. We have some contract extensions mixed in with, I mean, as I speak right now, the owners are voting on a few different things. One of the things have already gotten approved, but you'll hear about them shortly in the NFL weekly update. So that's going to be the episode. Let's just get right into it. Before we do get into it, though, as I've been saying, and now I can clip this out because it's not a part of the intro, but this is the time of the year. It is the Hall of Very Good nominations. The nominees are out. If you want to cast your ballot, just head over to my Instagram at cover_zeropod. Click on the link tree, find the ballot, make your votes. That's starting in early June. Yeah, go vote for the Hall of Very Good. These players deserve recognition too. They had great careers. They deserve to be honored in some way. And that's what I'm trying to do. Trying to honor these guys who had great careers. Won't make the Hall of Fame, but really, really good players. So again, click the link in my bio, on my Instagram bio. You'll find it. Please vote. It would mean a lot to me. But let's get into the NFL weekly update here. Brock Purdy signs a 5-year, $265 million deal with a total of $881 guaranteed. Brock Purdy got paid, and that is a big number. But when you break down the number and you look at AAV-wise, who that puts them right around, Jared Goff, Tua. That makes perfect sense to me. That, again, based on what the market is, that's right where Brock Purdy should be slotted in. I think it was very good for the Niners to get him at that number, not higher, not making more. It's like, I think that him getting the $51 million a year, great number. Again, relative to where the market is, but I think it's a great number. I mean, there was talks last offseason where, oh, he could get $60 million like Dak did. But nope, he stays at 51. Good number. But where it differs from the Tua and the Goff contracts is Brock Purdy got more term than both of those guys and also got more guaranteed money. And it's like, oh, well, if he's getting more term and more money, of course he's getting more guaranteed money. I went through the steps and actually broke down like how much of each guy's contract is guaranteed. I think Purdy was at 60 something, Goff was at 50 something, and then Tua was at 35. So yeah, Brock Purdy more or less will be the Niners starting QB for quite a long time, and he absolutely deserves it. Like, again, you can argue that they would have made that Super Bowl his rookie year in 2022 if he doesn't hurt his elbow against the Eagles. Then they do end up making a Super Bowl against those Chiefs. This season was just kind of like a little up and down, but he's had a great start to his career. And he was Mr. Irrelevant. I think his rookie contract, he made like $5 million total. And now he's going to make $265 million over the next 5 years. Like, absolutely incredible story. Like, this is a Hollywood movie. Like, screenwriters would be like, oh yeah, the guy who was the last pick in the draft to all of a sudden he's making how much money in the NFL? Great story from Brock Purdy. He absolutely deserves that money. Interesting to see where the Niners go from there. The Niners are set up fairly well, though, and I'm going to talk about another extension here, too. I mean, I'll just mention it, but they re-signed this offseason, or extended Brock Purdy, Fred Warner, and George Kittle. Like, their core is all extended. They got some young pieces that they may or might not pay, and they're hopefully that they do have to pay them, obviously, because that means that they're good players, but the Niners' money situation is looking decent, and then next year you would think that, oh, Trent Williams and CMC, they'd get off that money, have more money again. They're in a decent spot. I think that John Lynch has done a very good job of building this team, and I don't think I give John Lynch really enough credit, but shout out to John Lynch, and shout out to Fred Warner. I just mentioned a 3-year, $63 million deal, 56.7 of that guaranteed. Once again, making him the highest paid linebacker in NFL history. Absolutely deserved. I don't think that there's any other linebacker, and I can't think of anyone off the top of my head because Roquan Smith did take a step back. But it's Fred Warner as the best linebacker in the league. Plain and simple. Like, I think that he is awesome. He absolutely deserves every bit of that money. Great, great player. Great for the Niners to get, again, to also get him extended. And what's funny, and I mentioned it, so Purdy, Warner, Kittle all sign extensions this offseason, but before the Warner and Purdy extensions, a few days before that, Niners ownership sold, I think it was like 5% of the team, where that comes in and around like $550 million. Well, you just gave 181 of that to Brock Purdy, and then 56.7 of that to Fred Warner. So basically, they sold 5% of the team, I think, to like local, like obviously rich as fuck, San Francisco families. And yeah, they use that money to pay their players. Smart business move, good move by the owners and management in general. So shout out to the Niners getting their deals done. Another extension here, Derrick Henry gets a 2-year, $30 million extension, 25 of that guaranteed. I mean, absolutely deserved. You don't see running backs getting extended into their 30s, but Derrick Henry has proven time and time again, he is just built different. The man is a monster. Shows no signs of slowing down currently. I mean, that rushing attack with him and Lamar behind that pretty good Ravens offensive line. I'm happy for him. I'm happy that running backs are starting to see their value just a little bit more. Obviously, like getting Derrick Henry for $15 million when Khalil Shakir is getting paid more than him is like a little unbalanced, and that's not a shot at Khalil Shakir. I just couldn't think of a wide receiver who was making $15 million in that range. Like, Derrick Henry is more than worth that money, and I like that he's getting most of that contract guaranteed too. Yeah, shout out to Derrick Henry, getting a little bit more of a bag. Eagles head coach Nick Sirianni also gets an extension. The financials aren't there, but obviously he got a pretty hefty payday after the Eagles Super Bowl win. I'm still like half in, half out on who Nick Sirianni actually is as a head coach. When they first made that Super Bowl against the Chiefs, it was Shane Steichen, it was Jonathan Gannon, and it was him at head coach. Then those two left, he made the wrong hires at coordinators, and it was like, what the fuck is going on? And then, okay, you bring in Vic Fangio, you bring in Kellen Moore, and oh, everything looks fixed again. The coordinators are great. So Kellen Moore is out now. Vic Fangio is staying, because again, he's a dinosaur. No one's going to give him another head coaching opportunity, which, great for Nick Sirianni that he doesn't really have to think about the defense until Fangio leaves. But that offense, again, shouldn't be hard to run an offense with one of the best offensive lines in the league and Saquon Barkley and AJ Brown, Devonta Smith, like, should be easy, but I don't know. We'll see what this new OC can do. Again, Sirianni absolutely deserves that extension after that Super Bowl win. Another note here, Trey Hendrickson says he will sit out the entire 2025 season if he is not, one, traded, or B, I guess, A, traded, B, whatever, one or two. Whatever. Yeah, so he's saying that he will sit out the entire season if the Bengals don't trade him or give him a new contract extension, which is completely valid because his camp, and he was told last year that, don't worry, we're going to give you another contract, or we're going to give you an extension next offseason. And he performed out of this world, was a defensive player of the year candidate, led the league in sacks, but of course, management also completely fumbled the T. Higgins thing and the Ja'Marr Chase thing, and all of a sudden now there's no money for Trey Hendrickson, which is fine, but do something about it, Bengals. And again, I've been saying I think that they're just going to twiddle their thumbs, have him play out the last year of his deal, because if he doesn't play, that year just gets extended. Holdouts don't really work for NFL players regardless anyways. And then they'll franchise tag him and he'll just be stuck there and yada, yada, yada. I don't think it's going to work out well. I think he's going to be a very unhappy camper for sure. And what makes it even worse, too, is that he's heard nothing from, the Bengals brass, basically, for weeks at this point. He has no idea what's going on. And then he gets a text from Coach Zach Taylor being like, hey, if you don't show up to OTAs, we're going to fine you every single day. And it's okay, thanks, Coach. That's nice. Again, I don't think the Bengals are a well-run organization. I don't think you can be a well-run organization when you're a legacy family, one of the first teams and, they bought the team in the 60s and they've controlled the team this entire time. But as I say that, the Chiefs are obviously very successful. The Steelers have been very successful. But all we hear talk about is, the Chiefs facilities and the Steelers facilities are absolute garbage because again, they can't invest into the actual team and the facilities well enough. Again, it helps when you have two great head coaches in Tomlin and Andy Reid, and it helps that one of them has Pat Mahomes. Head coach and QB fix 90% of the things on an NFL team, but when you don't have those things and you're just a cash poor team, it's tough, very, very tough look, but we'll see what happens in the Trey Hendrickson saga. So, NFL meetings are happening currently, so we're going to talk about a couple different topics that they're going to vote on. Starting off with the thing that actually got confirmed as happening. So NFL players are allowed. Yes, you heard that. NFL players will be allowed to play in the 2028 Olympics in Los Angeles for flag football. I don't even know what some of those scores are going to look like. And obviously, NFL versus flag football, it is two different sports. Everything is relatively the same. But it is hard to grab a flag versus just tackling a guy in the open field. And again, slightly different rules, but the quality of athletes that are going to be on USA's team, I'm very, very excited about. I'm also excited about Canada's team because, we got a few, some Canadian NFL players, but also we got some, I think that we should medal in flag football is all I'm saying, but that's very, very exciting news. I don't know. Again, I think a lot of NFL players are going to want to put their hat in the ring of playing this, and it still is far away. So guys like Tyreek says he wants to do it. Well, Tyreek, you're going to be in your mid-30s at that point, and I don't know if the Olympic team is actually going to want you at that point, but we will see. That's very exciting. Interested to hear more details about that. The other things that they're voting on, though, they're trying to tweak onside kicks. Just briefly, so last year you were only allowed to have an onside kick in the fourth quarter. They're scrapping that. You can have an onside kick whenever now. I don't think you have to declare it beforehand now, which is great. They're also pushing it up a yard. So instead of having that 10 yards of separation, it's now 9 yards. They're just trying to get an uptick of successful onside kick conversions, which it is very hard to do. Because right now, I think the number I read was 6%. And to me, if you can get that up to 10 to 15, then we're cooking with something, because I like the idea that an onside kick can actually work, where now it just feels like it never does. 6% kind of shows that it really never does. 10 to 15, again, not a high percentage, but more of a chance anyways, so that's something. They're voting on the tush-push again, the Packers being a bunch of little bitches. Don't like the tush-push. Obviously, it's been used against them very, very effectively. When they try to use it, it was awful. But yeah, so they're trying to ban the tush push, and they're not even just trying to ban the tush push. They're also just trying to ban any pushing or pulling of teammates to, like, extend the play. So again, when you have those scrums of someone trying to get that running back trying to push for the goal line, and all of a sudden he's getting stood up, but here come the big offensive linemen to give him a little extra juice, that's not allowed. I saw clips circulating around on Twitter of, like, plays of, like, yeah, oh no, the running back's about to, like, fall down, and the offensive lineman, like, stops him from stumbling and then, like, throws him forward into the end zone. Like, we're gonna miss those plays too. And that's why I hate this rule. Like, banning the tush push, like, fine, whatever, it stinks, you shouldn't do that anyways, but banning pushing and pulling your own teammates is awful. And I think that takes a lot away from the sport, and I love seeing those scrums and having, getting those few extra yards and just maintaining your feet. Like, it makes the game more enjoyable. And yeah, the offensive lineman just getting an assist for tossing their dudes in the end zone. Like, I like that. And if the NFL takes that away, I'm going to be very, very upset. I think over the winter meetings, it was a 16-16 vote. Has to be 24-8. 24 votes to pass anyways. So we'll see what happens with that. And the other thing that they're voting on here is they're trying to redo playoff seeding. So right now how it works is you win your division, you get a home playoff game. Simple as that. It's division winners 1 through 4, and then you have the 3 wild card teams with that one seed getting the bye. Now the one seed's still going to get the bye in this new potential format, but now screw division winners. It's just going to be by seeding. So if you're in the, what was a competitive, so the Vikings last year, so they would have lost to the Lions in week 18 to lose that divisional game, but they still would have been the 2 seed, I believe. So, and I don't know who that would have, they would have ended up playing, would have still been the Eagles. Doesn't matter. I don't think it would have been. Either way. So, like, that's how that would have worked. So instead of the Vikings having to go on the road to LA, they would have hosted a home game. Now, I hate this because winning your division should mean something. And people are like, well, winning your division still does mean something. It's an automatic bid to the playoffs. And while that's true, I don't, like it should mean more. And division rivalries should mean more, where when we get towards the end of the season, so specifically for this season anyways, the Commanders and Eagles are facing each other 3 times, or twice in the final 3 weeks, and in this hypothetical world where the division doesn't really matter, so let's say it's like a Vikings and Lions thing from last year, where both teams can earn the 1 seed, and then it's like, okay, well, if they are, well, obviously they're pushing for the 1 seed because you get the bye, but let's say they're both pushing, or they're both 2 and 3 right now, they can't catch the 1 seed, and the division, it doesn't really matter, because they're both, okay, well, if we lose this one, we're 3, if we win it, we're 2. They're still going to host a home playoff game anyways, and hey, they might even sit people, because those divisional games don't matter. It hurts me. Like, divisional games should matter, and people make the, like, oh, well, the NFC South fucking stinks, and, like, they shouldn't be able to host a home playoff. Yes, they should. And those bad teams, like, who was it? It was like the 7-9 Seahawks. That might have been the Beastquake. We would have never got the Beastquake if this playoff format was always the case. Like, yeah, bad playoff teams having a home field advantage and still beating the superior teams, I love that. It's a little bit more parity. It's a little bit harder for these. Again, it's an incentive to win your division. So I hope that it doesn't come to that, but just keep it the same. I hope that that gets voted down. I'm going to check back in on those 3 other things. Either way, the Olympics one, I think it got tweeted out like half an hour ago that, like, it got pushed through 32-0. So we'll see. The NFL schedule came out, and I'm just going to hit on a few highlights anyways. No primetime games for the number 1 overall pick, Cam Ward. So no primetime games for the Titans. And again, I don't think the Titans are very good, but Cam Ward might be the least talked about number 1 overall pick in God knows how long. And, like, yeah, I can go back to, like, oh, 2013. It was Eric Fisher, like, small school left tackle who went first overall, where it's like, yeah, but like, who talks about offensive linemen in general, unless you're like a true diehard, where the fact that like a first overall QB is just getting no buzz, the fifth round QB by Cleveland, Sanders, is getting all of the buzz right now, and it is what it is. I'm sure that Cam Ward doesn't mind the lack of attention, and he can just kind of focus up for the season, but the fact that there's not like a Thursday night game where the national audience gets to see the first overall pick play, like, I think that kind of sucks. Yeah, Cam Ward doesn't get talked about enough. The Monday night game, so obviously Monday night games, but there's going to be doubleheaders as always. And I'm trying to remember what the doubleheader schedule was last year. I think it was like 7:30 and 9:30. Like, it was staggered really weird, and I didn't quite understand it, but the NFL was like, okay, well, like, if we have a staggering issue, let's actually fully stagger the game. So now, instead of like the 7th, I think it was like 7 and 8:30. Like, I think like the one kickoff time stayed normal and the other one was earlier. Now it is 7 and 10. I absolutely hate that, and not because it's like, oh, I gotta stay up late and blah, blah, blah. Well, technically it is that, because when I move, I'm gonna be an hour ahead. So instead of these games starting at 10, they'll be starting at 11. And that means they go until like 3 in the morning, and you know what? I'm probably just not gonna watch those games. Thankfully, most of the teams on that later slate stink, and I don't really care for, so that's good, but 10 is way too late on the East Coast to start an NFL game. Like, if you want to stagger them, because, yeah, instead of 7 and 8:30, do 7 and 9. Like, I think that 9 is usually when halftime would start for, maybe it's a little, either way. 10 is way too late. Keep going. A little bit of Dolphins news. The Dolphins have 6 standalone games for some reason, 5 of those primetime, one of those being the game in Spain against Washington. But, yeah. 6 standalone games. I don't fully understand it. I don't think we're that good of a team. The NFL clearly believes in the Dolphins more than I do, which I guess is good. But that confuses me a little bit. And last note for the highlights for the schedule. Thanksgiving schedule might be the best we've seen in a while. We get the early afternoon game of Green Bay versus Detroit. Those should be 2 teams competing for a playoff spot, competing for the division even. The afternoon game, we get Kansas City versus Dallas. I'm not too high on Dallas, but at least I think that Dallas offense should be fun. And it's, again, it's the Chiefs, it's Mahomes, it's Andy Reid versus the Cowboys, who, again, it's the media darling, even though they're the fucking Cowboys and they haven't done shit for 25 years. And then that night game, another divisional game, the Bengals versus the Ravens. That should be fireworks. That should be a really, really fun game. So yeah, Thanksgiving schedule looking good. A couple more notes here. So the NBA draft lottery happened last week, and obviously it was big news that the Mavericks jumped all the way up to go get Cooper Flagg, and people are calling it rigged and whatever, and it's like, okay, this is what it is. And then all of a sudden, I see people. I see Mike Greenberg, and I see Adam Schefter being like, oh, the NFL should use like a draft lottery. No, the fuck it shouldn't. There is no tanking in the NFL. And as much as people want to be like, oh, of course they're tanking, like, the Dolphins tried to tank in 2019. We ended up with the 5th overall pick, still got Tua, which I'm happy about. But, like, there are players, like, players, there's no guaranteed contracts in the NFL where you're playing for your job year after year after year. And guys are giving 110%. I mean, we can just go to the, when would that have been? The 2022 draft, where the Texans, basically, they had control of the schedule. They lose a meaningless Week 18 game to the Colts. They get first overall pick. But no, they came out there and they won on a last second play. And obviously, it worked out for them because the Panthers traded up for Bryce Young, and then the what's-its-face, the Texans ended up with CJ Stroud, and everyone was happy anyways, but, like, teams don't tank. The NFL adopting a draft lottery would only be good for TV ratings and money. In terms of, like, the NFL product, it would hurt the NFL product, because you hope when you get first overall and you need a quarterback that there's a quarterback that you love and you're ecstatic about, but if there's a lottery, there's a chance that you just might not be able to get that quarterback to make your team better. And that's kind of the only way that you can make your team better is by getting an established good quarterback or drafting a rookie who is a star right out the gate. Because other than that, you just can't. Like, it's very, very hard to improve your team. It's fine the way it is. Teams in the NFL do not tank. Fuck that idea. Awful idea. Next note here. Caleb Williams reported, and his dad, I'll throw that in there, almost blew up the draft in 2024. Caleb did not want to go to the Bears, and I think this was news at some point during his draft cycle too, but this has been like confirmed now. I forget what ESPN writer put it out in an article, but he's writing a book, and this was one of the stories that was in there, or maybe it was just, I don't know, doesn't matter. But it was basically being like, yeah, the Bears are an inept franchise. They have always been an inept franchise, which is fair. They have never had a 4,000-yard passer in the history of their team, which every other team has had. Like, they're a historically incompetent team, and it sucks to say, but they just are. And I don't blame Caleb for not wanting to go there. I mean, it happened with Eli Manning. It happened with John Elway. Kind of happened with Bo Jackson, who I will talk about in a bit. But yeah, was really, really wanted the Vikings to go up, really wanted to go with Kevin O'Connell. And again, obviously came around and was like, okay, yeah, like it is what it is. And now I'm sure he's very happy because he's got Ben Johnson. He's got, again, things are looking up for Caleb and the Bears, but would have been something to like blow up the draft. There was talks about him like, oh, if the Bears would have picked him, he goes to the UFL to play for a year. That would have been insane. But that was news. And last note up here. A movie called Madden is coming out. I don't know when it's coming out, but it stars Nick Cage as John Madden and Christian Bale as Al Davis. I'm interested in that movie. The casting looks really, really good for both of them. But yeah, that's just kind of the last note there. Let's get into some of these most interesting players. So I've got guys who were born in the 1990s all the way to guys who were born in the 1800s. So I think I'm going to start with the most recent, work my way back. But so let's start off with the most recent guy I have here, and it is Shaquem Griffin. You might remember him. He's only been out of the league for a few years now, but born July 20th, 1995 in St. Petersburg, Florida. And you might recognize that name too, because he has a twin brother, Shaquem Griffin, drafted by the Seahawks. They both played together at UCF. But Shaquem, he had his hand amputated when he was 4 years old. Did that stop him? No, he kept playing football. And yeah, went to UCF, played college ball there, where he ended up being AAC Defensive Player of the Year and multiple all-conference honors. And then was drafted to the fifth round by the Seahawks. And at that combine, and he still holds the record, has the fastest 40 of any linebacker in combine history. Ran a 4.38 at, I'm trying to remember how big he was, but he was like a big dude. I think he was like 6'2", 230, 240-ish. Like, he was a flyer, and people make the joke. Well, it's like, oh, well, you know, he's missing some weight, which I don't think your hand would really contribute to that much. But he made it to the NFL without having a hand. Just that is just a modern-day success story. And again, like, he wasn't even like a UDFA, and he was brought in to be like, oh, he's a camp body, and oh, look at the story. No, like, a fifth-round pick, like, that's still like you're investing in that guy and hoping he can develop into something. Was a good player. I liked him. Was a great story. So that's Shaquem Griffin. Next guy up here, another guy who you might have heard of, it is Josh Cribbs. So Josh Cribbs, born June 9th, 1983 in Washington, D.C., was a high school quarterback, ended up going to Kent State where he played QB for all 4 years. I was not aware that Josh Cribbs was a QB. All I know him is he's an electric returner, but I didn't know that he was one of these college QBs who converted over to wide receiver technically, but he was obviously just strictly a returner for the most part. He basically holds every school record at Kent State, whether it be passing yards, rushing yards, touchdown, total offense, like you name it. He has that record for Kent State, which is obviously awesome to see. He is one of two true freshmen to pass and rush for over 1,000 yards in a season. And again, as a true freshman, like that's crazy. And then, yeah, was a UDFA signed by the Browns and ended up having a 10-year career. And as I've said, became one of the most prolific kick return guys in NFL history. At the time of his retirement, he held the record for most kick return touchdowns in NFL history with 8, only to be surpassed by Cordarrelle Patterson with 9. Excellent, excellent career. 3-time Pro Bowler, 2-time All-Pro, made the 2000s All-Decade team. It's an interesting, again, going from college QB to, like, one of the best kick returners in the NFL. And I know it's like, oh, well, you know, like, Julian Edelman and Terrell Pryor, like, they made that switch over to wide receiver and had, like, well, Julian Edelman obviously had, like, a much better career than Terrell Pryor, but Terrell Pryor had, like, a 1,200-yard season. But I think being a kick returner, like, I don't know, that takes, like, a special type of, like, juice and guts. And either way, I like that story. I didn't know about that from Josh Cribbs, that he was a quarterback at Kent State. So that's a fun one. Next guy up here is Jason Brown, someone who you probably have never heard of before, and it makes good sense. So born May 5th, 1983 in Henderson, North Carolina. Ended up actually going to North Carolina. Good college career. Interior offensive lineman, center. So he was a 4th-round pick by the Ravens. Finished out his rookie contract there, and then he ended up signing a pretty decent deal for, again, the mid-late 2000s. I think it was like a 5-year, $27 million deal. That's like pretty good money for back then. Went to St. Louis to play for the Rams. Ended up getting cut, and when he was in free agency period the next time, he was getting like some like 1-year offers, kind of like, okay, like decent money, but like still a 1-year deal. And he was just like, you know what? I'm done. I'm retiring. So at the age of 29, he retired from the NFL. And what did he decide to do? He's like, I'm going to be a farmer. Did he have any farming experience before? No. He watched a bunch of YouTube videos and just kind of learnt as he went, which I found really cool. But now he has a 1,000-acre farm and he donates crops to local food pantries, which is obviously awesome. But he's donated around 500,000 pounds of sweet potato and 50,000 pounds of cucumber. Again, weird story, but yeah, retires from the NFL at 29 to start a farm that he's never even tried before. YouTube told him how to do the rest, apparently. Sounds like a good guy. Interesting story anyways, so we can keep going here. Now, there is a reason I am wearing my Bo Jackson shirt. There's a reason I have a picture of him right above me. He is one of my favorite players. So, and I've talked about him before, but I'm going to do it again because Bo Jackson is one of the most interesting people in NFL history. So born November 30th, 1962 in Bessemer, Alabama, ended up playing college football at Auburn, where he won the Heisman in 1985. Goes on to the combine, allegedly ran a 4.12. We didn't have the official numbers back then. It was all hand timed, but allegedly ran a 4.12, had a 39-inch vert, 11.3 broad, a 6.663 cone, all at 6.1, 230. He is built. He is jacked. And for people not understanding like the 3-cone times, Tez Johnson had the fastest 3-cone time at the combine this year. It's a good measure of agility. And he ran a 6.65. So Bo Jackson was 0.01 slower than Tez Johnson, who, you know, Tez Johnson, 150 pounds. So Bo is a freak. And then was the first overall pick in 1986 by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And you might be, wait, he got picked by the Buccaneers? Wasn't he a Raider? And you'd right, he never played for the Buccaneers. And I looked at that draft class because I was curious. I'm like, oh, well, who could Tampa could have picked? That draft class was awful. Like, you know how Wikipedia, when you go and you look and it's like, okay, this person, Hall of Famer, and then like you get highlighted if you've been a Pro Bowler? There was one Hall of Famer in that entire draft class, and it was Charles Haley, who was a 4th-round pick, who just got into the Hall a few years ago. Very good career, but yeah, bad draft class apparently in 1986. So the reason why he never played for the Bucs is because Bo was also an elite baseball player. He was drafted by the Yankees 50th overall in 1982. So that's just right out of high school. And he's like, no, I'm going to go to Auburn. I'm going to play football. I'm going to play baseball and go from there. Football was always Bo's first love, though. He loved baseball, but like football was his thing. But the Buccaneers screwed him over. So it was, again, the draft cycle, usually like January to April, and you go into meetings and whatever, but Bo was still in his senior season at Auburn playing baseball, so it was supposed to be, so he was still like, because when you're in the draft process, like NCAA stuff doesn't matter, but because he was still actively playing in NCAA sport, it was a little bit different. But so the Bucks wanted to fly him in, interview him, have a meeting, have him tour their facility, like all normal, relatively normal stuff. And Bo wanted to make sure of like, okay, well, did you guys clear it with the NCAA that like I can do this and you can take me on a private plane? And then like the Bucks were like, yeah, you're all good, Bo. We all checked. And turns out he wasn't all good. Wasn't able to play half of his senior season in baseball. And he just basically told the Buccaneers to go fuck themselves. They still picked him first overall regardless, but, yeah, absolutely crazy. And because everyone thought, well, like, okay, well, he's going to go play NFL. When the MLB draft happened, he called up, or his agent called up, the Kansas City Royals, who had just won the World Series, the year before, to basically tell him, he's like, he's not playing football. Draft him. And that's exactly what the Royals did. They took him in the fourth round of the 86 draft. And then it gets interesting, though. Because obviously, he played for the Raiders, as you can see on my t-shirt. So, same thing. The Raiders take him in the seventh round of the 87 draft. The Bucks have given up his rights. And Bo was like, okay, like, I'm good to play baseball. And Al Davis was like, yeah, you can play baseball. Just come play with us after. And that really got Bo's mind racing a little bit. So yeah, once the Royal season was done, he would join the Raiders whenever that would be. He would usually play like 10, 11 games per year. And yeah, he ended up becoming the first player and only player ever, and probably will be the only player ever, to make the All-Star or Pro Bowl in the same year. So he was an All-Star in, do I not have that in front of me? I think it was 1990. I think he was a MLB All-Star in 1990 and a Pro Bowler in 1990 as well. Absolutely crazy. And then obviously he has the career-ending hip injury. And again, if you don't know, I guess I could just explain it to you. Basically, he was getting tackled. Some guy tackled him, and because Bo's such a strong runner, he popped his hip out of its socket. And then on the tackle and like landing on the ground, it rolled back into place, but also trapping like some blood vessels and stuff. So it was just like never quite right, needed surgery, never really got fixed again. But yeah, Bo Jackson, absolutely crazy athlete, one of the best athletes of all time. Again, an all-star in two different professional sports in the same year. In, like, the late 80s, 90s. Like, this isn't like, oh, it was in the 50s when, like, no one was playing. No, like, he did it, like, at, like, I mean, obviously not peak popularity, because it's peak popularity right now, but, like, the NFL and the MLB were still major, major things. So, that's Bo Jackson. Next guy we have here, we have Tom Dempsey, probably someone you haven't heard of. Born January 12th, 1947 in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Was an NFL kicker, 12-year career. All-Pro and Pro Bowler in 1969. At the time, in 1970, had the record for longest field goal, 63 yards, which was then broken by Matt Prater in 2013. So, held that record for 43 years. That's cool. And you're probably wondering, like, why are you just talking about a kicker? It sounds like he's just, you know, he had a fine career. He was good. He was born without any toes or fingers on his right foot and hand. So no fingers, no toes. So he was basically just playing. He was kicking like this, like his shoe. And you can look up pictures. It like, so like where your toes go in and how it curls, that was just flat. So, and he was one of the last people, because again, if you didn't know, the soccer style of kick was becoming like a relatively new thing when Tom Dempsey was playing, but he was one of the last ones to just kind of do the straight on kick. And people joked he had the advantage because he had like a flat surface when he was like toe punting it. And he would just be like, I don't think it's an advantage to not have any toes or fingers, but like, you guys do you. So yeah, Tom Dempsey, all pro, pro bowler, didn't have toes or fingers on the right side of his body. That's pretty interesting. And again, held the NFL record for the longest field goal made in NFL history for 43 years. No toes on his kicking foot. That's absolutely nuts. Next guy up here, we have Ed Too Tall Jones. How tall is Too Tall? He was 6'9", so get into it a little bit more. But born February 23rd, 1951 in Jackson, Tennessee. Attended Tennessee State, an HBCU school. For basketball, didn't really even play football in high school, wasn't offered. I think he only played like a handful of games, but he decided he's like, no, I'm going to make the switch. I'm done with basketball, and ended up making the switch and ended up being the first overall pick for the Dallas Cowboys in the 1974 NFL draft. And he was the first player from an HBCU to be drafted first overall, which is absolutely crazy. And then, yeah. Played five seasons for the Cowboys, very good player, won a Super Bowl, and then just, you know, in 1979, he's like, I'm just going to go box. I'm going to go professional box for a little bit, and that's exactly what he did. So in high school, he competed against like a Golden Gloves boxer, and then his basketball coach found out, and he's like, you're picking basketball or you're picking boxing. Didn't know that football would be his number one sport, but yeah, in 1979, he's like, I'm going to go box. Ended up having a 6-0 record with 5 KOs. And what I found interesting about this, because I'm like, oh, 6-0, like, would have been like over the course of a year. It was over a span of 3 months. That man boxed professionally 6 times in 3 months with 5 KOs. And then he's like, you know what? I'm going to go back to football. Rejoined the Cowboys in the 1980s. And then 3-time Pro Bowler, 3-time All Pro and Pro Bowler. Very, very good career. The NFL didn't start counting sacks until I think it said 1982, but the Cowboys counted sacks beforehand, so supposedly Ed Too Tall Jones has over 100 sacks in his career. What I'm shocked, though, is he's not in the College Football Hall of Fame or the NFL Hall of Fame. Like, Super Bowl champion, had over 100 sacks in like an era where like sacks were kind of hard to come by. You would think that he would make it, and like, especially the College Football Hall of Fame, he technically is in the Black College Football Hall of Fame. Why those aren't like amalgamated at this point is a little weird to me also, but that's Ed Too Tall Jones. Two more guys here. Might have heard this name before. Dick Night Train Lane. First of all, Night Train, one of the best nicknames in NFL. Usually he would just be called Night Train Lane. Terrific, terrific name. But born April 16th, 1928 in Austin, Texas. And then 3 months later was left in a dumpster wrapped in newspapers. He was just left in a dumpster as a baby. His parents didn't want him anymore. His mom was a sex worker. His dad was a pimp. And they just found him. And then obviously his foster mom ended up finding him, raising him. Very nice. But he played 1 year of football at Scotts Bluff Junior College. Like, he was not a football player, basically. I think he liked football, but wasn't offered at his school. Then he played 1 year in college, and then he ended up joining the Army, where he played on their football team. Not like Army the college, like joining the actual Army, and I guess at that point, like, the Army would have football games, but he got all Army honors. Again, I don't know where that really qualifies, but served in the military for 4 years, started working at an aircraft plant, like lifting heavy metal, sheet metal, and on his way to work, the bus would pass by the Rams practice facility. So one day after work, he decided to go in there and just be like, hey, could I get a tryout? I think someone on the team knew him and was like, yeah, no. Let's try to give this guy a tryout. So he was a wide receiver, and then it wasn't really working out. And I'm like, okay, well, let's switch him to DB. And then the rest is history, essentially. So went from, again, working in a plane manufacturing plant to having 14 interceptions in his rookie season. Yes, you heard that right. 14, which is still a record standing today. Most interceptions of a season all time. He's fourth all time in interceptions with 68. 10-time All-Pro, 7-time Pro Bowler, 2-time interceptions leader, was on the 50s All-Decade team. Obviously a Pro Football Hall of Famer. But what a story, going from being left in a dumpster as an infant to Pro Football Hall of Famer. And again, and not someone who was like highly touted or played at college. It was just like, he was like, walked by the facility. He's like, if you guys want to give me a tryout, that would be great. And the rest, it's like, he just could have been like, no, the dream's over. Like, I'll just, and he didn't, which is absolutely awesome. So that is Night Train Lane. And finally here, we have Jim Thorpe, born in May 1887. Yep, I just get a month, I don't get a date, because we're that old, where, like, we're that far back now, where I can't get exact dates, which I think is cool. But born in May 1887 in the Sac and Fox Nation, that is Oklahoma. So yeah, Jim Thorpe is indigenous, was a 3-time All-American at Carlisle Indian Industrial School in Pennsylvania, coached by Glenn Sconey Warner, better known as Pop Warner. Yeah, that Pop Warner, the legendary football coach. I mean, if you play youth football, typically called Pop Warner football. Jim Thorpe, coached by Pop Warner. That in itself is just cool. He played running back, DB, kicker, punter, did it all in college, was the unofficial leader in interceptions, scoring, TDs, rushing yards, total offense in 1912. Ended up playing 11 years of pro football for teams like the Canton Bulldogs, the Orang Indians, the New York Giants, the Tampa Cardinals, and also the Chicago Cardinals. Yes, those are just two separate teams, which is also just hilarious. And for most of those teams too, he was also the head coach. So, you know, he got coached by Pop Warner, he played for all these teams, just dealing with the adversity of being indigenous itself too is crazy for that time period. And I haven't even gotten into like the real interesting parts about him. Actually, another interesting part, more about his football career. So he got paid $250 a game to start his career with the Canton Bulldogs. So that $250 is roughly $8,000 a game in today's money, which is very, very good money. And that comes out to roughly $3 million a year in 2025. They like played, again, it wasn't consistent seasons and standings, but from what I gauged anyways, it was anywhere from like 10 to 13, 14 games, something like that. So around $3 million a year in 2025 money, but like that's a lot of money in 1915. Like, I can guarantee you that. Was in the inaugural class of the Pro Football and College Football Hall of Fame. Obviously there's the Jim Thorpe Award for the top DB in college football that's given out now. But now we get into the real crazy stuff, where I talk about Bo Jackson being one of the best athletes of all time. I can easily put Jim Thorpe in that category too. Just casually has 2 Olympic gold medals in the pentathlon and the decathlon. Played in the MLB from 1913 to 1919. So while he was also playing pro football, he was also playing some pro baseball there, which is crazy. Also played a little pro basketball. That didn't get... no one knew about that until 2005, when someone was combing through old books and letters and stuff, and we were like, wait, Jim Thorpe played pro basketball? Wasn't the NBA, obviously, but still played a level of pro basketball, which is very, very cool. Considered playing pro hockey, which is just funny to be like, maybe I'll play hockey, I don't know. And the fact that he even like could have done it is absolutely crazy. And was also a collegiate ballroom dancing champion. So yeah, on top of being a Pro Football Hall of Famer, a College Football Hall of Famer, pro baseball, pro basketball, he's apparently a great ballroom dancer, 2-time Olympic champion. And again, all during a time where majority of people in the States absolutely hated him. So shout out to Jim Thorpe, huge legend. Ended up being a sad, tragic story, and then I won't get into it. But yeah, those are some of the most interesting guys in NFL history, at least in my opinion anyways. I've got to get going relatively soon because I have baseball in 40 minutes. So I am just refreshing the feed, seeing as that if anything has happened. I think Jordan Schultz was reporting on it. Jordan Schultz, what are you saying, my guy? Okay, so only the flag football one has been announced. By next week, you'll know. I'll know. I'll talk about it then. But yeah, good episode. And obviously, until then, if you've liked this, please like, share, retweet, subscribe, tell your friends, and all that fun stuff. And until next time, peace.